gentlemen, welcome to this very obscure microsode. Hi, I'm Hex.
I'm Cap.
Brandon.
Colin.
John.
And we're talking about obscure movies. This is a Nerdy Show microsode.
What track did we come in from?
Oh, good question. That's a very, very good question, Hex. Why, we came in with a little Chaz Jankel. That's
is that the guy's name?
Yep.
That's awesome.
That's
his real name. Chaz Jankel.
Chaz Jankel.
That's a good name.
That's a track called Number One. That's a little track from the Jankel there.
Good old Jankel.
You may recognize Number One from the film Real Genius.
Oh,
I think it's
Real
safe
Genius.
To say that.
Is that an obscure movie?
I asked Hex about this. We'll discuss this, but this is a microsode that's a Nerdy Show's favorite obscure movies, brought to us by Archaeus, one of our honorary producers. For those of us who can make it to this minisode tonight, we're just going to talk a little bit about our favorite, most obscure films, and maybe you guys can, watch them and tell us what you think, and list off your own on the forums.
I had a quick discussion with best friend Bob before this, because we watched a lot of movies in college together, and I introduced him to a lot of movies that
Stag films.
Yeah, that I thought were just common movies. There are movies that I grew up on that I really loved, like Return to Oz with Firouze Balk. To me, that's a common movie. It's a creepy-ass rendition of Frank Elbaum's...
It's amazing. It's a must-see film.
Yeah, but to him, Bob had never even heard of it. So Bob labeled it as an obscure film. So I'm at the point where, like, well, am I just... Since I grew
as a nerd, what is an obscure film?
Well, I also grew up in a household that was super saturated with movies.
Yeah,
we had so many movies, so many things. My mom is all about obscure movies, and she's always mailing me new stuff and telling me about new stuff. I heard about Fido, the relatively obscure zombie movie, from her. I'm at a weird reference point that I don't know what's obscure. Is 12 Monkeys obscure?
I mean, not really. Everyone knows
Brad
about it,
Pitt, right? Bruce Willis, Terry Gilliam.
Right, but not a lot of people know about it.
It was when I feel like if you were of age to see the film
right.
when it came out in theaters, you fucking know about it.
Right, but it's also now it's to the point where does old make it obscure? Like Chinatown with Jack Nicholson.
No, that was an Academy Award winner.
There's no way.
Right, but nowadays, who the fuck knows about
well,
it?
Well, then Yankee Doodle Dandy is really obscure. It was
or anything with Bing Crosby. Really, exactly. That's that obscure.
Oh, man.
What about Reanimator? Because I absolutely fucking love all the Reanimator movies. Still waiting for Jeffrey Combs to make the new one. Probably never going to happen. Is that obscure? I think Reanimator. A lot of people.
I've never seen it.
There's a lot of people who haven't seen
Reanimator.
Based
on H.P. Lovecraft. That's cool.
Really, really see Reanimator. It's amazing.
Is Interstellar 5555 the movie based off of Daft Punk's album Discovery?
Daft Punk is one of the biggest
it's
bands
a huge
in the world.
Right, but
there's
how many
no
people
way.
Know about the movie?
Everyone who likes Daft Punk, which
well,
is
a yeah, you know Daft Punk. You
Daft Punk's fan base, which is gigantic, knows
true,
about the
that's
film.
True.
Well, here, I've got one. Here's one you probably have never even heard of. I think it's called Land of the Rising Sun. It's real, actual footage of Nazis testing biological warfare on Japanese people.
What?
There you go. It's that obscure. Watch it.
Is it like an edited film, like meant to be viewed, or is it
it's like them pouring toxic poisonous substances on like their hands
yeah,
while
I mean,
they're
is
alive
it,
and
is
the
it,
flesh comes off and
is
they're
it,
screaming?
Is it a documentary or is it
I
like
don't really remember.
A snuff film?
Probably both, but it was such a long time ago.
Where did you see it?
But yeah, the Gamera trilogy.
Yeah.
I would put those as obscure because I knew of Gamera. Yeah.
I mean, if you're a giant monster aficionado, you're gonna probably know about the 1990s Gamera trilogy that we watched recently, but I didn't know about it at all. And between those of us who saw it, we couldn't recommend it more. It's
yeah.
amazing.
Yeah, no, that's on my top. I would put that on my top tier of actual trilogies. One of my favorite Disney movies. Most people have never even heard of Something Wicked This Way Comes.
I've heard that. Isn't that like a song?
It
or like a poem?
It well, it's that... from Macbeth.
Yeah.
That line is from Macbeth.
But I'm not familiar with the Disney movie.
It's actually based off a Ray Bradbury story.
Oh, okay.
With Jonathan Pryce
I know that this exists, and I've been meaning to track it down.
Oh.
So it's good, then.
Oh, fuck, yeah.
Cool.
It is amazing.
Hmm.
But it's so many people don't know about it, but it's like, it's Disney.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people actually haven't heard of the Song of the South or of Sword in the Stone, either.
How does anyone not heard of Sword in the Stone?
I mean, if you said Black Cauldron, which is similar, I would buy it.
Yes.
But
I remember Sword in the
Stone.
That's amazing.
That's
a classic.
Yeah.
I mean, turned lots of people furry.
Archimedes, at
the very least.
But so, yeah, but Song of the Stone.
Why did you plant
that
in my head? Besides, why did you do that?
besides Splash Mountain, a lot of people haven't even seen Song of the South.
What the fuck, Splash Mountain? That's an obscure reference.
Let alone the Tar Baby section of Song of the South.
Isn't Splash Mountain a ride?
Splash Mountain is a ride. It's a ride based on a film that Disney refuses to release in America. If you order it from Japan, you can get it.
Yeah, I've never been on that.
And Song of the South is just to give people like some reference. It's based on an idyllic Southern setting, it's post-slavery, but it's still black people being all like, "Sure is nice working for you. You're so kindly. Isn't this a romantic, idolized version of the South?"
what? Watermelon, you know, big lips.
And I don't think that's historically accurate.
It's based on a bunch of like actual like cultural heritage stories from black slaves and everything. Like that's all valid. But all that was collected and compiled by a white dude who had some pretty radical views on things. He wasn't exactly a friend to the black man, you could say. They've got a lot of flack for this romanticized version of the South. It was a kind of writing, actually, that was really popular at the early 20th century for people who wanted it to be okay to be Southern. And like, no, really, slavery was not that bad. So that's what it's based on, and as such, they won't release it. And there's a lot of cultural context that just doesn't translate anymore. Should it be banned altogether? Well, no, but I understand why Disney, as a corporation who still owns the rights to that film and still controls the release of it, would not want it out for any reason.
Right.
But, you know, Disney's also the big proponent of copyright law getting extended forever and ever, so
right.
That it may never become public domain. We're off topic a little bit. Let's cash in a little bit extra time, because we actually have to independently talk about our favorite obscure movies.
Dead Alive.
That's a really good movie.
Cool. Peter Jackson's
Dead
Alive.
Peter Jackson,
before he was the shit.
Yeah, well...
Oh, he was still the shit.
I love that it has the monkey rat or the rat monkey or whatever.
What are you saying?
That one woman's...
The creature that started the whole zombie thing is the rat monkey thing.
Mm. I like how that one woman's name
and
is like
And it's
Poquito.
Referenced in King Kong.
Oh, yeah?
In the boat. In the giant boat that they take to King Kong's island. They're in the hole, there's all these different animals. One of the signs says, Sumatran rat monkey.
Haha. Well, tell me what Dead Alive's about. I know lots of things about it, but I've actually never seen it.
Oh, before Piranha 3D came out, it had the record for the most amount of fake blood ever.
Wow.
Used in a film. For Piranha 3D, and Mark told me about this, and he's a big advocate.
It's Mark
for,
with a C.
Mark with a C. For Dead Alive, Piranha 3D had to fill in an entire lake with fake blood. They
Holy
pumped
shit.
Blood into it and actually injured the environment.
I saw that movie.
Fuck me.
Christopher Lloyd.
Wow.
Before that, Dead Alive held the record for the most amount of fake blood used in any film. And it is fucked up. If you want to see what's really going on in Peter Jackson's head, go watch Dead Alive. Go watch Meet the Feebles.
it's where the whole thing came from, where, you know, a guy's holding a lawnmower and cutting up.
Yeah. He holds up a lawn. He's
from
in a
Dead
room.
Rising, like,
he's in
like
a
that.
Room. Filled with zombies. He holds up a lawnmower just plows right through them.
This set the standard for a lot of awesome
zombie horror
movies.
It also has an amazing character, the goddamn priest.
I forget a lot about that.
Oh my god, I kick ass for the Lord.
Well. Now, Hex, you came to me with Real Genius, though. Like,
Real Genius.
You're doubling up here. So we played this Chaz Jenkel track, number one. Like, I love Real Genius. It's one of my favorite 80s comedies of all time.
It's awesome. It's incredible.
But it's kind of mainstream. It's starring Val Kilmer. It's one of his first starring roles after Top Secret.
Well, until I got to high school, I'd never even heard of it.
It took me a while. People are like, you never seen it? It's like on Comedy Central all the time. Apparently, it was.
It was in the 90s.
It's great.
It's so clever. It's so,
Some would say it's Real Genius of a film.
Yeah, or Val Kilmer's best movie. You know, besides Batman Forever. Besides Batman Forever.
It's about Val Kilmer plays Chris Knight, this like really amazing kind of super genius.
Hyper genius.
And he was at one point like kind of a quintessential genius, but he said, you know, fuck that. I don't want to be that. I want to be attractive. I want to be cool. I want to be a pain in the ass of all my professors who want me to do better, who want me to be some perfect little dweeb.
And what's the name of the actor of the dean? I love not the dean, but the that one professor. He was also in Ghostbusters as Walter Peck.
Yeah, I don't remember the actor's name.
I love that actor.
You'll recognize him. Yeah.
He does such a great job at being that.
The one who turns off, makes the containment facility get turned off.
Yeah, the man who has no dick.
Yep, it's true. This man has no dick.
They in this film, he plays a college professor with a government contract, and he's secretly creating a laser that's going to be used in a Reagan-era like Star Wars program to vaporize people from orbit.
Chris Knight and his fellow students are physics students, and they're building a laser. It's what is that, a 10 megawatt laser?
Yeah, I think so.
It's a, their goal is to make a 10 megawatt laser before the end of the semester.
They're basically, they have to do this thing that's pretty much impossible to do.
The professor has threatened Knight to just...
And he gets a government contract, they get an A, they don't even fucking know about it.
Yeah.
And Chris Knight, being an idealist, does not want to contribute to a weapon of mass destruction. Right. He's just trying to make a kick-ass laser and get an A. There's all kinds of cool stuff in the film. The soundtrack is amazing, and it's never, ever been released.
You were telling me about that. I'd always looked for the soundtrack, and I just assumed it was just out there. I just couldn't find it.
Yeah. You'll find some fan compilations online if you look in the right places.
Oh, man.
It's a great collection of music, featuring some tracks you know, like Tears for Fears, Everybody Wants to Rule the World, and Don Henley's All She Wants to Do Is Dance, but then also a bunch of more obscure and really, really cool,
like what we just 80s
pop
to.
Songs. Yeah. Colin, let's go to you. You got an interesting little gem.
My obscure film is actually, it's an animated film. It's called, well, this one specifically is called Unico on the Island of Magic.
Oh my god, fuck you, I was gonna say that. You piece
really?
Of shit, yeah.
Awesome.
I love Unico.
Awesome. Okay, yeah. Because, well, Brandon and I mean, we can talk about Unico. Unico is basically, Unico the character is a Japanese manga and anime character, and it's a unicorn, like a baby unicorn with white fur and
I'm
a pink
Unico.
Mane.
Can I be
yeah,
your
Unico.
Friend?
Yeah, Unico. Yeah, anyway,
I think I've seen that.
Yeah, there's two movies, but the movie that I'm specifically talking about is Unico and the Island of Magic, where basically there is this evil puppet named Lord Kuruku, who has the ability to change living creatures into these like weird zombie
like doll
puppet
things.
Yeah, yeah, dolls. They're called like living puppets, and they're like his slaves. It's really kind of creepy. And they turn them into like these dough things that have no identity, no
emotions, or like,
yeah, exactly, no emotions. They're complete puppets.
In premise, what Colin's saying sounds like it makes kind of sense, but what it actually like that concept actually reduces the people down to a kind of primary shape of a human body. It's really disturbing how all amount of like life and humanity and existence is sapped out of them in this crazy weird thing. And this is a children's film,
I to be honest, yeah. I don't remember a lot about either of them, except I remember a little troll named like Beasley, but I think that was the first movie. I don't even
that was the first one. The thing was called Beasel. Beasel.
And wasn't there this guy getting women drunk or turning cats into girls? I completely remember.
I don't know.
He was dropping things into their wine glass and telling them to drink, and then they started.
I think
like,
that was the first one. I do know that there's like in Island of Magic specifically, there's a brother and a sister, and the girl Cherry is on Unico's side. Like Unico becomes friends with Cherry, and then the older brother Toby is actually working for Lord Kuruku and
Toby's
like helping him turn people into these like they're kind of like cookie cutter, you know, if you had like the cookie cutter like gingerbread men, that's what they kind of look like.
If you've been to that thread on our Nerdy Show forums where all the spooky crap lives that was started in October, there's a manga that's about these holes that are shaped like people that you can get stuck in, and it's kind of like the opposite of that. Well, whereas in the manga it's holes, this is like a stone shape like a person that like it used to be a thing, but it's gone.
Yeah, it's awesome. It was made in 1983. It's animated, and the only way you can get it is like through like kind of like a bootleg.
If you go to MegaCon, there's a couple booths that can like, get you these.
I think I actually have them in my room.
Well, yeah,
somewhere.
Cap got one for my birthday.
This
it has
so
both.
Cool.
It has both of the movies on the DVD, so it's great. So thanks, Cap. That's great.
No problem. Are they also on YouTube?
Yes, you can watch. You can watch specifically. I know that you can watch Island of Magic in its entirety on YouTube. But
oh,
yeah,
nice.
It's pretty awesome. The guy who does the voice for Lord Kuruku is crazy, and it's like so terrifying.
Yeah,
that Lord
this will
Kuruku
screw you up
is
if
really,
you're a kid.
Really.
I recommend
it's a,
watching
it's a, it's
both
an evil
movies.
Puppet. It's crazy. It's awesome.
John, you were foaming at the mouth before the episode to tell us about an obscure.
Oh wait.
Yes.
Wait. I just have a couple one sentence for a small thing I have to mention. It's called Black Sheep.
Oh, yes.
Fuck you.
And
we're not talking about Chris.
Are we talking about the Australian one?
No, the New Zealand film.
I mean the New Zealand. Scott. Well, I'm running out of obscure movies now, asshole.
It's called Black Sheep.
I know Black Sheep.
Get married already.
And let me just say the only just one thing.
It's an amazing
zombie
movie.
Sheep. And during the movie, there is a person who gets his dick bitten by a zombie sheep.
They show
it. And they show it. And it is like pulled 18 times its length. Like Stretch Armstrong.
And then it goes.
And it just snaps.
Amazing movie. Black I'm going to have to think of another movie to talk about now after you took both of mine. Damn. Cannibal the Music probably doesn't count.
That sure.
Cannibal the Musical, I like.
It's become a cult hit. But it was, at one time, extremely obscure.
Oh, yeah. And then the South Park guys became the South Park guys.
Yeah.
Okay, well, okay, I've got one. It's called Robot Carnival.
Never heard of it.
It is an anime.
Progress, please.
Very old. I think it was made in the 80s. All it is a collection of short stories animated and shoved together. I believe one of them was, like, this guy who creates this, like, perfect female doll, and he lives with it, and over the years it shows him aging, getting older, and dying while he's living with this doll, and she, like, never once shows him anything, and then, like, at the end after he dies, she, like, you see, like, a teardrop out of her eye or something. Like, it's just a bunch of collection of weird, completely unrelated stories. One, there's, like, two giant robot things fighting. But I remember that movie, and I remember it being awesome, but it was also been many years since I've seen it, so it might not be that good. I watched a lot of anime back in the day. They used to play it on Sci-Fi all the time. Yeah. Sci-Fi channel back when it was good.
Cap, does that movie from the Ozploitation count? The one with Jamie Lee Curtis?
Oh, Road Games? Oh my god.
Yeah.
I think most things that are Ozploitation, unless you're Australian, are probably not mainstream. So yeah, Road Games.
Hold on, let's give John a chance.
Yeah, John, come here. I'm sorry.
Interstate 60.
Nice, good one. Interstate 60, directed by Bob Gale, the guy who wrote Back to the Future.
Oh.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Go for it.
I've never heard of it. What is it? Yeah.
I do not even know where to start. There's, like, a lot of large scope stuff, but basic story, there's a guy who's trying to figure out, like, what to do with his life, right? And so then they throw in this wacky character who allegedly, legendarily, the son of a leprechaun and, like, Indian or something wacky.
What?
Yeah. So, you know,
it's all sorts of mojo mixing together.
Well, yeah, and so it's, like, got all this, like, whacked out, like, American lore remix kind of going on there with this guy. There's a lot of, like, Americana feel to it.
O.W. Grant. Yeah,
yeah.
Who is played by Gary Oldman.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah.
So they make up this entire, you know, weird legend kind of a thing. He kind of has, you know, this ability to grant wishes, normally winds up fucking people over. I guess you could say it's kind of like the leprechaun thing, but every now and then he actually helps somebody out. And so he takes a liking to, like, this kid who's trying to figure out, like, what the fuck to do with his life.
Who's played by James Marsden, a.k.a. Yeah. Cyclops.
Ultimately, the kid winds up on this, like, wacky road trip, which is, I'm trying to think of, like, what the hell to even compare it to. He's on a road that doesn't actually exist, traveling through, like, I guess you'd say almost like mythical America, but it's all like warped kind of like down the rabbit hole practically.
Oh.
Is it kind of like that movie Big Fish?
It's actually Big Fish is about the only movie you could compare it to.
Huh.
Okay. Really? That was,
yay!
That makes sense.
It's got a crazy cast.
Yeah.
Christopher Lloyd's in it. Michael J. Fox has a cameo.
I'm sold.
It's got Chris Cooper.
Oh, wow.
And Kurt Russell.
What? Kurt Russell?
Yeah.
Why am
this
I
is
not
an obscure movie? Why
yeah,
is it?
No, I know.
I don't know
about this. Here's the thing. It was made in 2002.
Hold on. You're telling me that there's a movie that has Kurt Russell, Christopher Lloyd, and Gary Oldman, and I haven't
seen
it?
Wait, and it was made in 2002.
Yeah.
Back to the Future.
It's not even that old of a movie.
No.
And it was from a decade ago.
It was independently produced because Bob Gale, like, though he wrote Back to the Future, is kind of like downtrodden. People don't pick up his stuff. It was written and directed by him. He only was able to make it by kind of pulling in favors from people. You can guarantee that none of these guys got what they usually get for a film on it. It was really poorly distributed. If you find the DVD of it, you'll see that it's got this kind of like packaging that highlights a bit scene with a sexy girl in it who's not even important to the movie. And they kind of sell it like a teen sex comedy. It says, get off on Interstate 60. Like, that's not what it's about. It's all the places that he goes are insane. John, tell him about some of the towns he goes to. Two of the towns.
The one that stands out in my mind right now, like off the bat, is actually the crazy drug one.
Yeah, a town run by Kurt Russell is the sheriff there.
The basic gist of it is that everyone goes and parties all night, and they have like this super addictive drug, and so they just basically go and be drug addicts at night, and then during the day it's basically like slave labor.
Oh shit, I think I've seen that, and they're like kids do it.
Yeah.
Oh man, I think I've seen part of that. I don't know where.
A mom comes because her daughters, you know, like started doing that, and then in the end she makes the choice to just you know, become a drug addict herself to be like with her kid, because there's like no other way, because once you take it, you are addicted, period. There's just, there's no choice anymore.
Whoa.
It is like America.
So that's one.
There's a town full of lawyers where everyone exists in a perpetual series of lawsuits. And as soon as a traveler happens to wander in there, chances are they're going to be imprisoned and have to hire a lawyer immediately. And then the lawyer will need a lawyer, will need a lawyer. And it's this like awful like commentary on the legal situation.
How long is this movie?
It's like 2 hours or so, and it gets really weird. I mean, the guy's traveling with a magic eight ball that answers all of his questions for him, and
maybe.
Damn. I really want to see this movie.
And
man,
Chris Cooper's character is one of my favorite things. But here's the movie, it is filled with outstandingly strong ideas and amazing characters. The writing and like the dialogue, a little off. A little bit not perfect, needed some polish, but you can just you watch it and you're like, everything here that's working is working so good, I don't care.
You mentioned Sci-Fi Channel. There's this one anime I stumbled across on it that I think might fall under obscure Iria.
Never heard of it.
Mm-mm.
Basically stars a female bounty hunter chasing this space monster called Zerum. It's this unstoppable juggernaut that just absorbs all humanity.
Is it good?
It's awesome. Huh. It's fucking phenomenal. The crazy thing, it's based off a live-action movie.
What? So it's an anime movie based off a live-action movie.
The live action is really good too.
Usually it's the other way around. Like,
right. I saw the anime first, and I'm like, oh no, and Sarah, I'm like, I don't know what this thing is, but it's fucking badass. Then I watched the movie, I'm like, holy shit, everything just got really creepy. I have two more movies I want to throw out there because I love 80s horror films. Like there were so many like really awesome ones that fell under the radar. Like, you guys ever heard of Cat's Eye?
I know of it. I haven't seen it.
I think it was a Stephen King. I'm not sure, but it's a collection of short stories involving a cat.
Like, we can remember two of them. From a cat's perspective?
Yeah, the main character is the cat.
Oh, and he's just witnessing like shit.
He's seeing stories. Like, there's this one story where this jackass, this evil dude, does a bunch of evil stuff, and then he's stuck out on a ledge with the cat. And the cat, and he's like, but he was tormenting that cat the whole time, and now the cat's tormenting him while he's on the ledge. And another one, the cat is at a house, and the cat, and there's that whole wives' tale of a cat steals breath from children.
I'm not familiar with this old wives' tale.
It's an old wives' tale. I have. And basically, there's also this little like monster, this like troll type thing that while the girl is sleeping, keeps on sneaking in and trying to steal her breath from her. The cat is trying to stop him, but they're like, and the kid is having breathing problems, so the mother's total. Superstitious, it's the cat. The cat is causing my child to have breathing problems. We must get that cat out.
So I'm not allergic to cats. It's a troll that's doing it. Say. What's this other movie you're talking about?
And then you were mentioning Ozploitation. There's this amazing zombie movie in Australia called Undead.
That's simple.
And I was originally making fun of it because the score is so Looney Tunesy. And I'm like, this is not scary whatsoever. You're trying to scare me. And then it's just like total, like halfway through, total awesome twist. And you're like, oh, okay. Wow. This movie got really cool. So
Colin and I could probably do a whole episode on Ozploitation if we wanted to.
Yes.
Here we go. I got my favorite movie of all time is a film called True Stories. It is the...
That's fucking obscure.
Poster.
Yeah. I have a poster in my bedroom. Basically, you know, the Beatles did Help. They did Yell Some Rain, blah, blah, blah. This is the Talking Heads film. This is the Talking Heads equivalent of Help, basically. It's written and directed by David Byrne, the front man of the film. It's really about him, and it's a weird, weird, weird slice of life thing about a town in Texas that doesn't exist. It's filled with characters that are kind of like strange versions of people from tabloids. There's a woman who's never left her bed in a million years. There's a couple who haven't spoken to each other in a long time. There's a guy who can hear people's individual radio waves, and the song Radiohead that is where Radiohead, the band, actually took their name from. This movie is incredible, really weird, really quirky, and is the only film, well, the only thing in cinema that is remotely similar to Earthbound. This film, I feel, and the Talking Heads music was a direct inspiration to Earthbound in a lot of ways, and not a lot of people have written on the subject, maybe nobody. Something I kind of like in my bucket list of things to do.
I think you should do that.
But like everyone knows the Beatles were a huge influence to Earthbound, but I put forth that Talking Heads were an equally large influence, though much more subtle. Really, really neat, strange comedy, a really postmodern comedy. It's very, if you like Earthbound, you will like True Stories probably. If you like the Talking Heads, you will like True Stories. That's not actually the big film I'm talking about.
Can I guess what it is?
Yes.
Is it Miracle Mile?
It is Miracle Mile.
Oh, shit. Miracle Mile. I knew it.
Oh, man, that movie's so good.
Miracle Mile is a film that is constantly vying for my top position. If True Stories didn't uplift me so much and give me so much entertainment, it would be Miracle Mile. Miracle Mile is, you know, if you've ever been to a film class, your teacher will sit you down. They'll tell you why Citizen Kane is important. They'll tell you about all the different cinematic tropes and everything and why it was revolutionary and all the things that go into making something an incredible cinematic experience, really knowing the craft and really deploying it well in a totally brilliant way that's perfect. Miracle Mile is a film that is the 1980s equivalent of that cinematic scope distilled into basically an incredible story, incredible art direction, incredible characters, perfect deployment of a film, and the concept is crazy.
I've never seen another movie like it. It starts off completely fucking insane.
The story is a man played by Anthony Edwards, from you may know from Top Gun. He's going to be in L.A. for like another day more, and he goes to the Liberia Tar Pit Museum, and he meets a girl, and they hit it off. They have this like completely perfect like experience, and he's like, this is incredible. This has never happened to me before. I've never had this like perfect like date experience. He wants to meet up with her later. She's got to go to work. She works the graveyard shift. Well, she works a late shift at a diner and gets off at like midnight. And so he says he's going to go meet her, and they have this like, it starts off with this like pretty simple story, but an accident happens. He flicks a cigarette off his balcony. A pigeon picks up the cigarette, goes to put it as a piece of the nest that the pigeon's building on top of his hotel. The nest catches on fire. The fire destroys the power lines. The power turns off in the hotel, and his alarm is disabled. So he wakes up at 3 a.m. Upon waking up at 3 a.m., he then goes to the diner where she's supposed to be. She's gone. He tries to talk to somebody. He's really stressed out. He's calling her from the payphone outside. His calls don't get through, and the payphone starts ringing. And he picks it up because he thinks maybe it's her. And it's a kid. And he's on the phone, and he says, Dad, it's really happening. They're going to blow their nuclear load in just a few minutes. I mean, it's all over. Everything, it's all over. And he's like, whoa, what are you talking about? This kid's just trying to call his dad, but he's calling from a nuclear silo somewhere, and he knows, he was the first line to know that something happened, something between the United States and Russia happened, and there are actually warheads on the way at 3 a.m. in the morning. So then Anthony Edwards comes.
And they know it's real because the guy ends up getting shot on the other line.
Yeah, he hears this kid get killed.
He hears a gunshot, and then the guy who shot him picked up the phone.
Forget what you heard and go back to sleep.
And he hangs up. And that's the premise of the movie. There are nukes on the way, and he had a perfect date that he's trying to find.
And he wants to meet up with this girl again. He goes into the diner. Some people believe him. Some people don't believe him. Tasha Yar, the actress who plays Tasha Yar, is there, and she is some kind of affluent, like weird stockbroker sort of person who has government connections. She double checks what he heard on the phone and confirms that there's a real threat, which gets everybody up in arms. And slowly but surely, the world around him starts spiraling out of control as he encounters all these different people early in the fucking morning when the world has gone to sleep and only the crazies are out.
There's only a few hours before the nukes hit,
and it's shot in real time.
Yeah, it is shot in real time. But one of the things that I think that is so interesting about the film is that there's a constant tension of whether or not this is a real threat.
Yeah, well, you're like, is this real or is this a prank?
Did Anthony Edwards actually just start this panic?
Yeah, was it an accident? Was it a mistake? Was the problem solved? Because as he goes on, things get out of control. Things get so out of control, and you just don't know. I mean,
don't tell me. I want to watch it now.
I'm not going to tell anybody how it goes. But the art direction is amazing. The score is by Tangerine Dream. It's
great.
It's so good. The guy who directed it, his name is Steve DeJarnette. He wrote and directed it. This is one of two films he's ever directed. He directed a film before it called Cherry 3000, which is very, it looks really good, but he didn't write it. It's not a good film. Other than that, he did a couple episodes of Hannah Montana. He's done nothing else. This film is amazing. No one, you kind of have to be in the know to know of its existence. You got to find it out, right? But it's got a cult status around it. He said recently at a showing of it in Los Angeles that he is working on another film, and I hope that happens. It was actually something of a Hollywood legend for a long time. It was being shopped around for about 10 years. It was originally created as a segment for the Twilight Zone film that got too big for it.
Which makes a lot of sense. It does. It makes sense.
Yeah.
In 1983, it was chosen by the American Film Magazine as one of the 10 best unmade screenplays. This came out in 88, the final film. Some studios were afraid of it because it's got... It was
in the early 80s, I mean, why you'd be freaking out over that.
They thought this. They read this, they're like, this is amazing, but we couldn't conceivably make this. It's a romantic like comedy that's dressed with its knot. That's terrifying. Who's gonna want to watch this thing? It was in production limbo for a while, and then eventually DeJarnette actually optioned it himself, buying the script for $25,000. He rewrote it, and then the studio came back to him and tried to rebuy it for $400,000, and he didn't take it. It ended up getting,
I would have sold it.
It got, I think, privately produced to a certain extent, but anyway, it just, it got great reviews for people who saw it.
But somehow
people didn't want to see this
film.
Somehow
it's still obscure. I didn't hear about it till Cap played it.
It needs a Criterion edition. It needs to be lifted up, and people will be like, this is it. This is one of the most important films of
ever.
The 20th century.
Yeah.
It crystallizes that entire era and that
Fifth Element,
like nuclear
yes.
paranoia. It's great. It's totally, totally, totally great. And we we've gone way over time.
We've gone over twice as much.
I mean, oops. I guess it's not a microsode anymore.
Just listening to you, I remembered four more movies. I'm not even going to list them off. You want to hear us more ramble more about...
We'll do a part two. Not even a fraction of the entire Nerdy Show cast is here, so we can keep this going.
I want to hear Mike's obscure movies, actually. And Brian's.
Okay, I got to jump... Oh, do you have any more?
No, I mean, we're gonna close it out.
I got one more I just want to throw out there.
Okay.
Forbidden Zone.
I've heard of Forbidden Zone. Never seen it.
Is it like The Danger Zone?
No.
Highway to the Danger Zone?
No, it was done by Danny Elfman's brother.
Yeah, that's why I know it, because Danny Elfman did a piece of score for it.
No, Danny Elfman scored it. It was the first film that Danny Elfman scored. And it is the milestone in Danny Elfman's career between The Mystic Knights of Oingo Boingo, which is really experimental stuff in the 70s, and what would eventually become Oingo Boingo. It's really interesting listening to the score of Forbidden Zone, which is about this kid's trek into hell. Danny Elfman plays the devil.
Oh, wow.
And his piece is an interesting rendition of Minnie the Moocher.
Jesus Christ.
Where he sings in it.
Wow. And if you want to hear more...
Holy shit, yeah.
But half the songs...
You gotta pull the plug on this.
Half the songs sound like Mystic Knights of Oingo Boingo, and the other half, this is an Oingo Boingo song before Oingo Boingo existed.
Huh.
Danny Elfman lifted that song. But yeah, we have so much more we could talk about.
We're going to play the Tangerine Dream track we're going to play from the Miracle Mile score is actually called Running Out of Time. Oops, this went long.
Yeah, sorry for this micro.
It was long and hard.
Yep, enjoy.
Enjoy.
Thank you. this week's episode of Nerdy Show. Nerdy Show is brought to you by a comic shop, Nerdapalooza, on the Rovita branch of Bantam.
If you have questions or comments, feel free to send them to info@nerdyshow.com. For more episodes of Nerdy Show, Dungeons and Doritos, comics, videos, and more, go to nerdyshow.com.
Sarsaparilla.
Grow mass with sass.
Don't touch my horses. You can subscribe to all Nerdy Show podcasts via the iTunes Store. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Nerdy Show or friend us on Facebook. If you enjoy tea, crumpets, and what you've heard, support Nerdy Show by telling a friend, or better yet, give us your money by visiting the Nerdy Store and picking up a t-shirt or donating directly for cool nerdy packs. Now